Dr. John Tolson's a guy that for many of you doesn't need any introduction. He's spoken to thousands of men in our community. He's been in our community for the last decade or so. He was here before that. But in the interim, he was the spiritual life coach for several big name organizations that you've likely heard of. People like the Houston Oilers, the Houston Rockets. What brought him back here is that he came to be the spiritual life coach of the Dallas Cowboys. We couldn't be more happy to have him here this morning. You'll see these books in the back, Take a Knee. It's his most recent book. We hope that you'll enjoy a copy of that. We're providing that for you this morning. So if you didn't grab one already, make sure you grab one on the way out of here. The wisdom that he has to offer us is just extraordinary. He's been a blessing in my life, and I think that he'll be a blessing in your life this morning. So please join me in welcoming Dr. John Tolson.
Matt, when do you want me to be finished? 5 to 8, okay. How y'all doing this morning? All right, well, it's a tough one. Every time I've got to get up early, I can't sleep. You ever had that problem? You probably don't have that problem. I went to bed. I guess it happens when you get older. But anyway, I was thinking, you can turn that sound down just a little bit so it's not quite as bold. This talk, How to Be a Great Dad, I was putting down some notes here. I guess this could be called An Anatomy of a Father, Who Retarded Papa. And one of the things I've learned over the years, I've got two kids, they're grown, got three granddaughters in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'm not a beginner at this thing. And I've often wondered, how do you learn how to be a great dad? And I grew up in a home where my mom and dad were divorced when I was 2 years old. Stepfather came into my life, and I think I was around 7, and my stepdad had no idea how to be a dad. So there was a gigantic hole in my heart and in my life. And you know, even to this day, there are times when I reflect back on growing up and lacking a dad that really was involved in my life. I don't know if you had that experience or not. Maybe some of you have had that experience, but man, it makes an impact on you. I remember there's one movie I just love. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's called The Rookie. I've probably seen it 10 or 15 times. Dennis Quaid's in it. It's about an old baseball guy makes a comeback. I mean, every time I watch that movie, because one of the key themes in it is a father-son relationship, I literally begin to tear up as soon as that thing comes on. So having a great dad, being a great dad is a big deal. I think being a parent, it's tough biologically. You know, it's relatively easy for most people, not all people. But being a great dad psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, et cetera, that's a challenge. And one of the things I've learned over the years is you got to be loose. I think we got a couple cartoons we're going to flip up here, but here was Moses as a kid. I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like that. Let's go to the next one. When you're old and living with me, you're going to bed at 7:30. So I love that one. It always comes back on you. So you better be careful what you do with your kids, because one of these days when you're drooling at the mouth and your zipper's down, you don't forget to put it up and all that stuff, they'll be taking care of you and they will get back on you, believe me. I have a neat son. And Luke is actually lives in Dallas here now. He moved here from Orlando not too long ago. And when we got Luke, we didn't get Luke the normal way. We adopted Luke. There's a wonderful place in Fort Worth called Edna Gladney Home. And a number of years ago, I had spoken there. I had a friend here in the Park Cities years ago that used to be on the board at Edna Gladney. And never believing or knowing or thinking that I'd ever be going back about a year later after I'd spoken to the girls that were there at the time waiting to deliver their children, that I would be going back to get a child. But my son Luke is now 35, and he is a great guy. We got him when he was 1 month old. Just a fantastic kid. He's brilliant. And I always say, you know, when they say, man, John, you must be pretty smart for Luke to be so smart. I'm really not. He's adopted. I can't take credit for it. So anyway, that's the way that one works. But anyway, one of the things we told Luke from the day one when we got in, our caseworker said, even though he's a month old, you whisper in his ear every day, every night, Luke, you are our special adopted son. And we literally did that. I don't think I have ever met a person, a kid growing up and now as an adult, a kid that had so much confidence. We all, one of the secrets, I think, too, was not only saying that to him, but I always was really big on having him around adults. And so when I would travel, I'm just giving you a couple of extra tips here, but I would travel or I'd be speaking somewhere in Orlando, Luke would always be with me. And he was so confident in speaking to people older than he was. And I taught him to do little things like looking people in the eye, giving a firm handshake, etc. I see kids today, they have no idea how to do that stuff. And I'm sure that's not your kids, but you got to teach them some of those basic things, and it'll make a life a lot easier for them down the road and for employment, whatever they do, etc. But Luke's a great guy. And one of the rules that we used to have was, not a rule, but policies that I personally had was, if I'm in a meeting and I get a phone call, you can interrupt me anytime if it's my kids or if it's my wife. So I'm sitting in a meeting one day in Orlando, and my assistant knocks on the door. I would have three or four people in my office, and she motioned me to come to the door. So I went, and she said, "You need to call home right now." Now, one of the things you got to learn is I think you got to be loose. And I think a lot of us guys are just a little too uptight, and sometimes that causes our kids to be a little uptight, but you got to be loose. And I love to have fun with my kids and still tell these crazy stories. But anyway, so Luke apparently had a problem at home, and I got on the phone. My wife said, "You need to come home right now." I said, "I'm in a meeting. You need to come home right now." Said Luke went next door, picked up the neighbor. There was a pile of bricks. Took one of those bricks, hit a faucet in the backyard. The water was just going straight up in the air. The wind was blowing crazy. It was blowing on everybody's windows in our neighborhood. So I had to run home for a second. And thankfully, I was close, maybe 5 minutes away. Get the big thing, stick it in the ground, turn the water off, and we call the plumber or whoever came to fix the faucet. It was only $600 to put that thing back together. It was a good deal. I think we got a discount. But anyway, that night, one of the policies that I had too was every night with my daughter, with my son, I would go in their bedrooms and spend time with them every single night. If I was out of town, I'd get them on the phone. That was just something every single night I did until they left for college. So that night I went in the bedroom with him. He had just gotten out of the shower, slicked his hair back. He was lying in the bed. And I mean, he was just like a mummy. He was just lying there looking straight up in the air. I sat down in his bed and I said, "Luke, how you doing?" He didn't say a word. So it's been a tough day, hadn't it? He didn't say a word. Then all of a sudden, he just shot up out of the bed, pointed around the corner where his mama was in the bedroom, and said, "Dad, you got to do something about that woman." Well, what do you do on that one? I'm on the floor, I'm laughing, I'm dying, and I wasn't a very good father at that time. So one of the things that I've learned over the years is the powerful impact of the home. And I think there are a lot of dads that go home, but they're not really functioning as a father in their homes. And so if you put this chart up from Columbia University, I think if you'll keep going, you'll see it. You have to stay with me. Keep going. Boom, boom, boom. And so you'll see that the church typically has about 1% impact. There are always exceptions. School, 16%. Home, 83%. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that impact from the home is positive. It could be extremely negative. And so again, as you look at that, the potential to have a great impact on our kids in terms of what goes on at home is absolutely astounding. So I pray that you will have that great impact on your kids. But let me tell you something. Your children, to a large extent, are going to become like you, like it or not. And you're going to have to live with your product a long time. So the question is, are you like you want them to become? Because you're stuck. And you know, I think one of the things I was thinking of the other day is I think every family ought to have at least one throwaway kid. You know, one kid to kind of practice on and mess it up with a little bit. I was reading this the other day, too. I'm just giving you some preliminary thoughts, and I'm going to give you some four or five things to take away with you. But a recent survey by America's most popular teen magazine revealed that only 4.1% of teenage girls in America feel they could go to their father to talk about a serious problem. Even more recently, USA Today published the eye-opening results of a study of teens under stress. When asked where they turn to for help in a crisis, the most popular choice was music, the second choice was peers, the third was television, and amazing as it may sound, moms were down the list at number 31, and dads were 48. Now, there are always exceptions to that, and I hope all of you all are an exception. But let me tell you, it often is just simply not happening in terms of things that are going on in our home. The cultural dynamics, the number of intact families, that's where there's a mom, There's a dad and at least one or more children. I just read a recent survey on that one that says that 55% of 15 to 17-year-olds in America do not live in an intact family. So the dynamics are changing in our country, and they have been changing for quite some time. How about divorce? I do a lot of speaking down in Florida, especially in the West Palm Beach area. We've got a lot of work going on down there. The divorce rate in West Palm Beach is 62.1%. And I'm not sure what it is in Dallas now, 49, 50. It kind of fluctuates back and forth. But a study was done a number of years ago with kids that lived in California, about 100 families, and these families had gone through a divorce. So what they did in this research was they followed these kids that came out of these divorced families for about 10 or 12, 15 years to see the impact on these children that came from these divorced families. Here's what they found. 32% were doing fine, 34% were still struggling, and 34% had serious emotional problems. So 68% of those kids that came out of divorced homes were struggling. Now, you may be from a divorced situation. I'm not trying to put that down. All I'm telling you is think about it if you're on the edge of it, and a lot of people in our city here are on the edge of it. So a responsible, godly dad, it's kind of hard to find. You know, I've worked with men for the last 40 years around this country, and all I'm saying is a responsible, godly dad's hard to find. I'm glad you're here, but there's probably a whole lot of dads that need to drag their butt in here and get here that aren't very responsible. And hopefully, as you guys, Dallas and Matt, and you guys continue to do this, you guys will bring buddies that you know are sucking wind and aren't getting the job done or screwing up their lives and get them where they can begin to be encouraged and challenged to be the dad that they need to be. But let me give you a thought. A guy named Pierre Morel wrote this. He said, over the last few years, I have seen in my office an increasing number of couples who share a common denominator. The man is active, articulate, energetic, and usually successful in his work. But he is inactive, inarticulate, and lethargic, and withdrawn at home. In his relationship to his wife and family, he is passive, and his passivity drives her crazy, and in the face of his retreat, she goes wild. It used to be the man was the guy that was playing around and doing the stuff, but now so many women are frustrated with their husbands. They're the ones that are making the move on other men, and maybe you know some of those stories. All right, I'm going to skip over a couple things here and get to the meat of what I want to say. How do you be an effective dad? What are some key things? I'm just going to tell you what I've learned over the years. I've made some mistakes. I've done a lot of things right. Not having a model at home of how to be a great father. I remember I used to say, watching my stepdad and reflecting on the fact that my real dad and my mom got a divorce when I was 2, all I have to do is do the opposite of what my stepdad did, and I'll be a great daddy. I mean, it was just absolutely horrific. So here are some thoughts for you that you might want to put in your little notes there. Hopefully take notes. I'm very impressed with people that take notes because that means they're serious about this, unless you have a photographic memory. Number one, dads that have their priorities together. A University of Southern California professor said the greatest means of communication is modeling. So your kids, what you see, what they see in you, the model you live out with them every day in and day out, has a gigantic impact on their life. And you often can't erase that, especially if it's a negative model. So your priorities have to be right as you live before them. I mean, do they see a helter-skelter guy? Do they see a guy that's driven and pumping it, making that next deal? Or do they see somebody with some kind of balance in their life? Chances are, if you live crazy like that, when they grow up, they're going to have a lot of emotional problems, and they're going to go crazy too. So again, your children, to a large extent, are going to become like you. Are you, like you, want them to become priorities? The objectives of your life always determine the outcome of your life. Aristotle said that an archer has a much greater chance of hitting the target if he can see it. So what are you aiming at? If you only had one thing to do and there was a big box up here on this front table, out of everything you do, what would be the most important one thing you'd put in the box? That would be an interesting discussion. Think about that. Are you modeling priorities out for your children, and are you seeing those priorities being instilled in them and giving them a shot at living those? There are four key priorities, and this is our first little point here. First priority is in the personal area. You got to get your own stuff together. You say, well, man, you know, my kids see me put my best foot forward. If you've got a private life that sucks, you need to get that together. If you're doing stuff that you ought not to be doing, if you're laying in the hay with somebody else but the mama, you better deal with that stuff. You say, well, that stuff doesn't happen around here. Are you kidding me? I counsel with these people that screw up their lives. You got to get your personal stuff together. Here's the thought. What you are as a person is more important than what you do, because what you are will determine what you do. And that's why when Jesus pulled his disciples together, these 12 crazy guys, and he told them in Matthew 25, he said, when I leave the planet, die on the cross, raise from the dead, go back to the Father, and you're here to carry out my assignment for you, all hell's going to break loose. It's going to be tough, he said, to be a daddy. It's going to be a tough deal to carry out my assignment. So there, something had to happen with these guys when they were with Jesus for 3 years, so that when the pressure was on, all hell was breaking loose, they didn't fold up like an accordion. Let me tell you what he did. For 3 years, he got the spiritual scalpel out and dug deep in their hearts and lives to change their character. It's an inside job. You know, we can dress it up on the outside and look appropriate, like we've got all the moves and smile and carry our little Bible and go to our little Bible studies and Bible study fellowship and all this stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. Not necessarily. And so one person said this, it was a government official. They said, if you know all the management principles without teaching character, you simply help the employee to become a better ripoff artist. And so we need to understand it's a deeper issue. John Wooden, I don't know if any of you remember John Wooden or not, about the year before he died, I think, at around 97. When he's 95, going on 96, great coach of UCLA and the historic basketball program, 10 national championships. I always wanted to meet Coach Wooden. I played basketball in college and have been around basketball teams for years. But Coach Wooden, I'd never met him. Well, a buddy of mine knew him. So we fly to California from Orlando and go in his little apartment. His wife had been dead for quite a few years. And here he is, 95 years old, still moving around. And we're sitting in his little office. And I'll never, never, never forget that meeting. I took voracious notes for 2 hours. I was sitting right next to him, just like I'm sitting here and he's right there. I mean, there's something special when you're in a room with somebody with such an incredible life, past, background, and character. But this is what Coach Wooden said. He said, be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because your character is what you really are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are. Character's the deal. And so if you want your kids to have character, then you're going to have to exhibit character before them. And you're going to have to let the one that made you work in your heart and life and help you to see that character develop. The second area is a marital area. Now listen to this. If you don't have it together personally in your character, ain't no way you're going to have it together in your marriage. There's a flow here. You leave out the character, then, and you are a character, then it's going to spill over in terms of that marriage. And here's the next area, parental area. If you don't have it together personally, you ain't going to have it together parentally. It just doesn't going to work. And then professionally, if there's no character, no values, no good marriage, no positive pairing, you're going to have an ineffective professional or business owner. Anytime I look in a company, the first thing I'm looking for is the leader of that company, because you understand, and so if somebody owns a company and that company kind of is weak as you go down, it always goes back to the top. I want to know about that man at the top. What kind of person is he? We've got some characters around here that own some interesting things, and they're interesting characters. Listen, 36% studies say of downtime in corporate America is due to family-related issues. 36% of the downtime. So you may have an assistant or a right-hand person, and they may be at their desk, they may have their assignment, but during the day and during the week, They are pulled in their mentally aside because of a kid that's driving them nuts, a relationship with their husband or wife that's not right. Let me just tell you, it impacts it, the bottom line. If your character is right, not right, and your life is not right. Second thing, parents that have good attitudes. I've been around some people who've got enormously great attitudes. And then I've been around other men, their attitude, it's lacking. So, you know, someone said that your attitude will determine your altitude. And we live in a culture around here, and I've been here long enough to know for 10 years now, before this, I was here years ago for a long time, and it is easy to have a interesting attitude in this culture in which we live. Listen to this. Psychologist Viktor Frankl said this. He believed that the last of our human freedoms is to choose our attitude in any given situation. And he was in prison, by the way, if you know anything about Frankl, in a Nazi camp for years. And so when somebody speaks to me like that in those kind of circumstances and had a great attitude, so what kind of attitude do you choose? Because those attitudes that you have in dealing with everyday life, where your kids are watching you, let me tell you, they're picking up signals from you every single day. Third thing, the big thing I've learned over the years, and I've made a lot of mistakes in this area, and this carries over right in your relationship to your wife, to people you work with, but it especially impacts your children, and that is, you got to communicate effectively. Let me give you some thoughts on that. First of all, I think you communicate not just verbally, you communicate your love in a number of ways. First of all, with your time. One study said that the average dad communicates with little children, small children, 37 seconds a day. We're just not engaged. And so we need to think about that. A man was talking to a friend one day who was, an expert on communication and with children, and he said, what do you think the key is to communicating to your children? He said, you got to give attention. He said, okay, would you give me a little bit more of that? He said, attention, attention. Well, could you elaborate on that a little bit? He said, yeah, attention, attention, attention. My son came up to me, and I told this in a talk we had yesterday here in the park. So he's about 300 guys for lunch, and I said, my son came in to me one day years ago, and I must have been reading something or whatever, but not listening to him. He grasped my cheeks, and he smashed his lips together. He said, Dad, when I'm talking to you, listen to me. Let me tell you, Dr. Ross Campbell years ago wrote a little book called Loving Your Children or Loving Your Teenagers. And one of the key things that he put in that book, I'll never forget, he said, you got to give focused attention. My wife was at this lunch yesterday kind of helping out a little bit in the back when guys came in. And when I walked out, she looked at me because I was kind of giving her a cheek. Said, I don't want a cheek. I want your lips and I want you to look at me. Look at me in the eyes. So let me tell you, it's very important that you give focused attention to your children. Very, very important. The second thing is with just, again, the time you spend with kids. Charles Francis Adams, the 19th century political figure and diplomat, kept a diary. One day, he entered the following. Went fishing with my son today, a day wasted. His son, Brooke Adams, also kept a diary, which is still, by the way, in existence to this day. And on that same day, here's what Brooke Adams, the son, put down. Went fishing with my dad today. One of the most wonderful days in my life. We will never understand the power of our presence in the lives of our children. I had a deal every single week when my kids were growing up and they were in school. Every week they had my undivided attention individually. Every week. And I'd pick them up from school or wherever it would be. The next 2 or 3 hours, my schedule was reasonably flexible. And so we could begin to go out and do whatever we did. But they knew they had my focused attention and time. And I think that had great dividends in their lives and how they've come along. I don't know if you've ever, talking about time, I know you remember perhaps the old song, Cats in the Cradle. I was reviewing that the other day. You might remember some of these words. He says, my child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away. And he wasn't talking, for I knew it. As he grew, he'd say, I'm going to be like you, Dad. I'm going to be like you. So he goes on and on the different stages in his life, and then it ends up by this. He said, I've long since retired. My son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could only find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he had grown up just like me. Let me tell you, it happens fast, guys. They grow up fast. And the time we spend helping them learn to ride that bike up. My wife was talking to a lady in our neighborhood not long ago in this area, and she said, she said, what do you do? And she gave her two or three different things that she did. She says, one thing I do is I have mothers in the Park City that call me up to teach their kids to do certain things. Like, she said, like what? She said, well, one lady called me the other day, would you come and we want to pay you to teach our kid to learn how to ride a bike? Are you kidding me? And then another one called and said, do you teach people how to tie their shoes? Gentlemen, that is sick. And that's the kind of stuff that's going on around us. And that's got to change. How do you communicate your love? I think you communicate it in a lot of different ways. But I think the kids need to understand that not only are you doing things with them and for them, but that you're really listening to them. I told a story yesterday at our luncheon, and I said, this guy was talking one day to one of my friends, and he said, how would you describe yourself? He said, I'm just a comma. Kid said, I'm just a comma. I said, what do you mean you're just a comma? He said, when I'm talking with my dad, he said, if he's talking about something and I want to say something, he'll be quiet. And I'll go ahead and say what I want to say. And then as soon as I stop, he picks up right where he left off. He didn't hear me. I'm just a comma. So when you listen to your kids, you got to give that focused attention. You got to really listen, and you got to learn to do stuff that they want to do. When I brought my son up, you know, being a halfway good athlete and playing ball, two sports in college, I wanted my son to be a ball player, and he was a fair athlete. But I put too much pressure on him. I'm glad in the nick of time I saw what I was doing. You got to do what they want to do. So one day he said, Dad, I want you to go paintballing with me. Do you know what paintballing is? That is evil. And so I said, I finally agreed to go with him out in this field, and I really almost didn't come back. I mean, I thought I had him. I had my little gun, all the stuff you're supposed to wear, and I come out from behind a tree, and I see him about 20 feet away. I charge him, but I didn't have something on in the gun to make it go. It wouldn't shoot. So he nails me, and I'm dead. I'm out of the game. I said, I'm never going back again. But somebody said this to me, take your son hunting so you don't have to go hunting for your son. Take your son hunting. In other words, do stuff with him. Figure out what they want to do. Not just your agenda, not just my agenda. A kid wrote his first essay for school. His topic was, what my dog means to me. My dog means somebody nice and quiet to be with. He does not say do like my mother, or don't like my father, or stop like my big brother. My dog Spot and I just sit together quietly, and I like him, and he likes me. I love that. Do your kids like being with you? Do they enjoy being around you? Do you enjoy being around them? Let me tell you, they know whether you enjoy being with them or not, or they know if they're just a bother to you. They know that. Let me ask you this. If your kids were to rate you on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, as a father, where do you think they'd put you? If they're old enough to know what you're talking about, why don't you go home the next day or two and ask them, how would you rate me? 1 to 10. How would you rate yourself as a dad? 1 to 10. And all I'd say is, as I was coming along, I did those ratings, and I found that I always had room to improve. And I wasn't a perfect dad, but I was a progressing dad. And I tried to do a good job, and I tried to do a lot better than what I grew up in. Dads, and this is the next to last little point I want to. Parents that affirm their children in every single way. Let me tell you, you are the most important person in your child's life. Mama's important, but you take the dad out of the equation, and there's going to be something missing in your kids' lives. Dad, you're key. And again, two things. With your daughter, here's what your daughter's awaiting to hear from daddy. Sweetheart, you are absolutely beautiful. For a son, it's boy, you got what it takes. They got to hear that from their daddy. And a lot of times, again, I didn't hear that. You know, I was, like I said, I was a pretty good athlete. And in my high school career, my dad, my stepdad, did not come to one game in all my high school career. And I played a lot of them. And my name was in the paper just about every weekend. Not one game. You show up, you affirm them, they've got what it takes as a son, you're beautiful as a daughter. You got to do that. Now, one of this little, we're going to give this book away, I think. Matt and Dallas put that together, Take a Knee. And what that little Take a Knee book is, I'm going to give you an illustration. I'm not trying to sell them. Somebody already bought them for you. When I was with the Cowboys, I used to do these little talks in the locker room just before the team would go out to start the game. They'd been out, they warmed up, they came back, they had like 8 minutes. With about 4 minutes to go before they ran out on the field, I'd get the whole team together. They'd take a knee, coaches, trainers, players, and I'd get in the middle of the circle and do about a two-minute boom in your face, inspirational, hopefully, little talk. And I've sent one of these books a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, to a buddy of mine in Colorado, Colorado Springs. And Dale came back through a few months later and came to my office here in Dallas and said, "Thanks a lot, John. I just want to thank you for the book." He said, "Let me tell you what I'm doing with the book, and I'll give you an idea here." He said, one of my sons is 11 years old. And so we made a deal that every night we'll read, and they're like a page and a half long, and they're all stories and kind of hook you because of the story thing in it. And he said, we read it, we talk about it, and we pray. And then the next day he goes to school and I go to work, and our commitment is to try to do what it says. Brilliant plan, because 99% of most dads in America never take a knee with their kid at night at all. So this is paying huge dividends in Dale's son's life. So he said, after we did the one on in there on being a servant, he said, my son said, "Dad," said, "there's a little boy at school. He's 11 years old. He's got cancer." And said, "They're trying to raise some money to get the special treatment that he needs. If I raise some money and put it in the pot, would that be serving?" His dad said, "That'd be fantastic." So he said his son raised about $300 or $400 in a week, put it in the pot. And then Dale came over to me and he pulled out his phone, and here was a picture of his son. Here's this kid with this beautiful smile on his face, big blue eyes, 11 years old, and on his own he had shaved his head so he could identify with his buddy at school that had lost all of his hair. Gentlemen, that young man and that father, there's something going on there that every dad needs. So I encourage you with your sons and daughters, take a knee with them, and the impact will be, it will pay great dividends in your life. You're the number one person to be able to impact them in terms of affirming their worth, their value. And one of the number one diseases in our country is low self-esteem. Every day your kids go to a middle school or a high school in this community, let me tell you, they're comparing themselves with other people and other kids in the class and how they're measuring up, just like you do. With what you have, where you live, what you drive, where you go, same old stuff. And we've got to help them understand that their worth and their value is not dependent upon what they have, where they live, and all that junk. What it is dependent upon, the fact that God made them, Christ died for them, He's got a plan for their life, He loves them, and He's gifted them. Those are things that don't go away. You get those five essentials in your life and in their life, you will have a winner. Final point. You've got to have parents, dads, that are spiritually dependent. You know, we go to church, a lot of big churches around Dallas. And I've often said that if preachers and big churches was going to change a city, it'd be Dallas. But yet it hadn't changed this city. There's more stuff going on in this community, more messed up people, more messed up families, and all the rest of it that goes with it. Because it ain't the big churches and the big-time preachers that's going to change it. It's going to be something much different than that. And that's another subject for us. But your faith in Jesus Christ, your walk with Him, has got to be real. So my question to you as I close is this. Is Jesus Christ in your life? Do you have a living relationship with Him, or are you just faking it? Do you just go through some ritualistic religious routine, or do you know the reality of Christ in your life? He's the one that develops character. He's the one that develops great daddies. He's the one that can come in your life and forgive you and take the guilt away and help you stand tall and look in people's face and look in their eyes and be a man of integrity. Is that the kind of person you are? Well, the time goes so fast. Let me close with this. When Mike was three, he wanted a sandbox. And his father said, "Well, there goes the yard. We'll have kids over here day and night, and they'll throw sand in the flower beds, and the cats will make a mess in it, and it'll kill the grass for sure." Mike's mom said, "It'll come back." When Mike was five, he wanted a jungle gym set with swings that would take his breath away and bars to take him to the summit. And his father said, "Good grief, I've seen those things in backyards. And do you know what they look like? Mud holes in a pasture. Kids digging their gym shoes in the ground. It'll kill the grass." Mike's mom said, "It'll come back, sweetheart." Between breaths, when Daddy was blowing up the plastic swimming pool, he warned, "You know what they're going to do to this place? They're going to condemn it and use it for a missile site. I hope you know what you're doing. They'll track water in everywhere. You'll have a million water fights, and you won't be able to take out the garbage without stepping in mud up to your neck. And when we take this down, we'll have the only brown lawn on the block." Mike's mom said, "It'll come back." When Mike was 12, he volunteered his yard for a campout. As they hoisted the tents and drove in the spikes, his father stood at the window and observed, "Why don't I just put the grass seed out in the cereal bowls for the birds and save myself the trouble of spreading it around? You know for a fact that those tents and all those big feet are going to trample every single grade of grass, don't you? Don't bother to say it." He said, "I know, it'll come back." Well, the basketball hoop on the side of the garage attracted more crowds than the Winter Olympics, and a small patch of lawn that started out with a barren spot the size of a garbage can lid soon grew to encompass the entire side yard. Just when it looked like the new seed might take root, winter came and sled runners beat it down. Obviously, this is not in Dallas. Beat it into ridges, and Mike's father shook his head and said, "I never asked for much in this life, only a patch of grass." His wife smiled and said, "It'll come back." Well, the lawn this fall was beautiful. It was green and alive and rolled out like a sponge carpet along the drive where gym shoes had trod, along the garage where bicycles used to fall, and around the flower beds where little boys used to dig with iced tea spoons. But Mike's father never saw it. He was anxiously looking beyond the yard and asked with a catch in his voice, "He will come back, won't he? He will come back." You think about that. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for giving us the privilege of being a father. And Lord, help us to know that even though we are imperfect, even though we will make a lot of mistakes, that we are to lean hard and lean in hard on our Heavenly Father through a relationship with Jesus Christ, who loves us and cares for us and will help us to know what it means to be a daddy. And so, Lord, I pray for each one of my friends here today that you will help them take seriously some of these thoughts that we've shared this morning, that they would be willing to evaluate how they're doing in their personal life, how they're doing with their priorities, how they're doing with their wives, and how they're doing with their kids. And before they point at someone else to get them to get their life right, may they look at themselves in the mirror, as we all should, and make whatever adjustments or changes we need to make so that we can be the best daddies that we can be. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, fellas. Good to be here today. Hope you have a good day.